We have a policy in our organization to recognize and honor people that we think are important, have done important things, or are inspirations to us. And this year we made posthumous honorary membership to two people. One was Philip Berrigan, who we lost recently, and the other was to Rachel Corey, the young woman who was killed in Palestine trying to help end the occupation there. At our meeting earlier this morning, we made both of those people honorary posthumous members of our organization. And now to present to Craig and Cindy Corey, the parents of Rachel Corey, this award, I'd like to call up Arnie Weber and Craig and Cindy Corey.
Rachel Corey was a precious gem, rare to find. Her folks are here who help create and bring and nurture a precious gift from God that is no longer with us. I never knew Rachel Corey in the flesh, never even heard of her name until after the events that took place in Palestine. They say some of us believe that the greatest gift you can give someone, if not one of the greatest, is to honor them when they are no longer with us because we have no other chances to do it. I pray that this entire body and our organization will open up their hearts after I do this presentation and allow the Coreys to share their hearts with us of their precious gift from God known as Rachel. Without that, I'll go further with the presentation. On March 16th, in the year 2003, Rachel Corey became the first U.S. citizen to shed her blood on Palestinian soil in Gaza while trying to prevent an Israeli army bulldozer from destroying a Palestinian home. We honor Rachel for the ideals of justice, fairness, and peace. She literally stood for right up to the moment of her death. We honor Rachel for the qualities we would emulate: love, compassion, commitment, courage. We honor Rachel because we need her example to strengthen our own resolve in the pursuit of peace and justice and fairness for all. Rachel Corey, honorary member, Veterans for Peace, granted this day, August 9th, 2003, by the membership of Veterans for Peace.
Wow, thank you. You're not making that easy for me to talk, but thank you. Thank you for recognizing Rachel in this wonderful way. Rachel would have been incredibly moved to be so honored by this group. and in such famous company, moved and proud and doubtlessly amazed. I can hear her laughing now. Veterans for Peace? No way! That's wonderful! And it is. And as her father and an old Vietnam vet, I'm full of pride. Pride and humility, and yes, wonder. Thank you all. Cindy came across a journal recently, a journal that she kept in the early 80s about the kids she was so totally involved in raising. She found there an entry from when Rachel was 2.5 years old. At 2.5, Rachel asked her mother, "Is brave part of growing up? Is brave part of growing up?" I'd like to usurp this moment for some thoughts I've been trying to gather together on courage, and to share at the same time some things about my daughter. The first is because I've been bothered by that issue for some time, and the second because I'm a very proud father, and I think on this afternoon I can get away with talking to you about her. I'm terribly disappointed and even ashamed that since 9/11, our leadership has not asked us for courage. No, they've told us not to be afraid, sure. They have their code orange or red or mauve or whatever. They tell us somebody may try to build up a building or a bridge or an airplane somewhere in California or Arizona or maybe somewhere in the West. We ask, should we be afraid? No, nothing to be afraid of. The answer, as we said last night, just you keep on shopping. As if fear were an embarrassment. Somebody too loud or drunk at the party. Something to look away from and pretend isn't there. How dangerous. How small, short-sighted, and dangerous. We know courage is not that hard. We know courage is not the absence of fear. In my experience, the absence of fear is often stupidity. No, courage only exists in the presence of fear. It is what you do while you're afraid. I talked to Rachel by phone before she left to go to Palestine and told her, "You know, Rachel, you don't have to do this. It's okay if you don't go. No one will blame you." She said, "I know. I'm scared, really scared. But I think I can do this, and I know I have to try." Is brave part of growing up? We know courage is not so hard to acquire. You can find courage by giving it to others. We've all done it. And Rachel did it too. She kept reminding us that nobody from the International Solidarity Movement had ever been killed. So we should take courage, feel better for a while. She gave us courage at first, and I pray that we gave her courage too. And then the emails started. Those now famous emails that show the suffering of the people of Rafah, the Gaza Strip in Palestine. On February 7th, Rachel wrote to her mother, "I think about the fact that no amount of reading, attendance at conferences, documentary viewing, and word of mouth could have prepared me for the reality of the situation here. You just can't imagine it unless you see it. And even then, you are always well aware that your experience of it is not at all the reality. What were the difficulties the Israeli army would face if they shot an unarmed U.S. citizen? And the fact that I have money to buy water when the army destroys wells. And the fact, of course, that I have the option of leaving. Nobody in my family has been shot driving in the car by a rocket launcher from a tower at the end of a major street in my hometown. I have a home. I am allowed to go see the ocean. Ostensibly, it is still quite difficult for me to be held for months or years on end without a trial. This is because I am a white U.S. citizen as opposed to so many others. When I leave for school or work, I can be relatively certain that there will not be a heavily armed soldier waiting halfway between Mud Bay and downtown Olympia at a checkpoint with the power to decide whether I can go about my business and whether I can get home again when I'm done. So if I feel outraged at arriving and entering briefly and incompletely into the world in which these children exist, I wonder, conversely, about how it would be for them to arrive in my world. They know that children in the United States don't usually have their parents shot and sometimes get to see the ocean. But once you have seen the ocean and lived in a silent place where water is taken for granted and not stolen in the night by bulldozers, and spent an evening when you didn't wonder if the walls of your home might suddenly fall inward, waking you from your sleep, and met people who have never lost anyone. Once you have experienced the reality of a world that isn't surrounded by murderous towers, tanks, armed settlements, and now a giant metal wall, I wonder if you can forgive the world for all the years of your childhood spent existing, just existing, in resistance to the constant stranglehold of the world's fourth largest military apparatus, backed by the world's only superpower in its attempt to erase you from your home. That is something I wonder about these children. I wonder what would happen if they really knew. On February 20th, she wrote to Cindy specifically about fear and courage in the face of that fear. Love you. Really miss you. Bad nightmares about tanks and bulldozers outside your house, and you and me inside. Sometimes the adrenaline acts like an anesthetic for weeks, and then in the evening or at night, it just hits me again. A little bit of the reality of the situation. I'm really scared for the people here. Yesterday, I watched a father lead his two tiny children, holding his hands, out into the side of tanks and a sniper tower and bulldozers and jeeps because he thought his house was going to be exploded. Jenny and I stayed in the house with several women and two small babies. It was our mistake in translation that caused him to think his house was being exploded. Although it abuts the settler road immediately next to the Gush Katif settlement, so I think it is only a matter of time. In fact, the Israeli army was in process of detonating an explosive in the ground nearby that appears to have been planted by Palestinian resistance. This is in the area where Sunday, about 150 men were rounded up and contained outside the settlement with gunfire over their heads and around them, while tanks and bulldozers destroyed 25 greenhouses, the livelihoods of 300 people. The explosive was right in front of the greenhouses, right at the point of entry for tanks that might come back again. I was terrified to think that this man felt it was less of a risk to walk out in view of the tanks with his kids than to stay in his house. I was really scared that they were all going to be shot and tried to stand between them and the tank. This happens every day, but just this father walking out with his two little kids, just looking very sad, just happened to get my attention more at this particular moment, probably because I felt it was our translation problem that made him leave. We could see the source of Rachel's courage become the people she met in Rafah, the people she described as in it for the long haul, because they have no choice, because they have to be there, because they are living on the wrong side of the green line. She took strength from them as they now take strength from her. Solidarity. On February 28th, she wrote, "When I'm with Palestinian friends, I tend to be somewhat less horrified than when I'm trying to act in a role of human rights observer, documenter, or direct action resister. They're a good example of how to be in it for the long haul. I know that the situation gets to them, and may ultimately get them, on all kinds of levels. But I'm nevertheless amazed at their strength at being able to defend such a large degree of their humanity. Laughter, generosity, family time, against the incredible horror occurring in their lives, and against the constant presence of death. I felt much better this morning. I spent a lot of time writing about the disappointment of discovering, somewhat firsthand, the degree of evil to which we are still capable. I should at least mention that I'm also discovering a degree of strength and a basic ability for humans to remain human in the direst of circumstances, which I also haven't seen before. I think the word is dignity. I wish you could meet these people. Maybe, hopefully, someday you will." A little more than 2 weeks later, Rachel was to die defending the home of Dr. Samir and his family. five of those people in Rafah she had come to know. In Rafah, they called her the woman who came to stop the tanks. In Athens, they called her she who would not retreat. We called her Rachel. So what courage can we take from Rachel's courage? Well, we can have the courage to pull ourselves together as a community. Instead of asking the meter readers to be spies on our neighborhoods, our leadership should have suggested block parties. Let's know our neighbors and friends from whom we can borrow a lawnmower or a cup of sugar. Not people who need to be watched with suspicion. We can have the courage to recognize other peoples of the world as essentially like ourselves. After all, we're a nation of immigrants, and these people are just our cousins from the old world. And we can have the courage to question our own nation's responsibility for the world in which we find ourselves. In her February 27th email, Rachel wrote, "I will say that I think the vast majority of us who are in some way passively supporting this genocide are unaware of what it is. I don't think that it's any excuse, but sometimes at night I quibble over it. Speaking of words, I absolutely abhor the use of polarities like good and evil, especially when applied to human beings. I think these words are the enemy of critical thinking. I think they are an escape from finding solutions and an incitement to future violence. Maybe you know, I think for a long time I've been operating from a certain core assumption, which only recently I started to articulate as such. Just the belief that we are all essentially the same inside, that we are all essentially similar, and that our differences are by and large situational. That goes for everybody. Bush, Bin Laden, me, you, Sarah, Chris, Dad, Graham, Palestinians, everybody of any particular religion, Uncle Craig, Tony Blair. I know there's a good chance that this assumption actually is false, but it's convenient because it always leads to questions, and it usually leads to analysis of power dynamics and the way private privilege shelters people from the consequences of their actions. It's also convenient because it leads to some level of forgiveness, whether justified or not. And it leads to pretty immediate rejection of analysis that rests on ethnocentric explanations for everybody's behavior. March 16th, our family lost the most cherished sister and daughter. The world lost a woman who had clearly found her voice as a writer, and was beginning to find her voice as a peace activist. Now we need your help. House Concurrent Resolution 111 calls for an independent U.S. investigation into Rachel's death. We need your and your congressional representatives' support getting that passed. So call, fax, email, or visit your representative and ask him or her to sign on to HCR 111 if she or he has not already done so. Ask them to contact the State Department and the White House to demand an independent investigation, and ask them to contact the Israeli embassy to demand the full release of the results of their military police investigation. Then make those same calls yourself. In closing, let me share the following passage. We are all born, and someday we'll all die, most likely to some degree alone. Our aloneness in this world may not anymore be a thing to mourn. Maybe it is a thing that has to do with freedom. What if our aloneness isn't a tragedy? Tragic passing of love affairs and causes and communities and peer groups. What if our aloneness is what allows us to speak the truth without being afraid? What if our aloneness is what allows us to adventure, to experience the world as a dynamic presence, as a changeable, interactive thing? Those are the words of Rachel Corey, written in the fall of 2002. And yes, Rachel, brave is part of growing up. Thank you.